Hello, and welcome to Parasitology Revisited, a series of revision podcasts for BVM&S graduate entry and infection and immunity students. Zoonotic Parasite Infections by Dr. Tudor Jones. To start off this podcast, I'm going to use the simple definition of a zoonotic parasite as a parasite that can infect humans and other vertebrates. However, if you Google zoonosis or look at Wikipedia, you'll see other definitions which extend this to imply that the infection of the other vertebrates is the normal behaviour of the parasites, with only occasional involvement of humans. More complex definitions subdivide the concept into zoanthroponosis, which refers to infections that humans can acquire from animals, and anthropozoonosis as a disease principally of humans that is transmissible to animals. But I'm sure you'll start thinking, what about parasites like tapeworms, where in one part of the life cycle humans become infected by eating the flesh of animals like pigs or cattle? But the cycle has to be completed by the pigs or cattle becoming infected from tapeworm eggs passed by the humans. So as usual, parasites are giving us a problem with terminology, mainly because much of it was originally developed for viral or bacterial organisms. So that's why I've gone for the simple definition that I used at the start of this podcast, with zoonotic parasites being the ones that can infect humans and other vertebrates. As you can see, this definition excludes arthropod-borne parasites of humans, such as malaria, but will still include the tick-borne human babesiosis, as the tick acts as the bridge between cattle or rodents and humans. Okay, I'll stop wandering around the hinterland of parasite semantics and get on with this podcast. But these points do highlight some of the problems we have to cope with in setting a comprehensive definition for what might initially appear to be a simple but very important aspect of parasite behaviour. Also, this definition gives you plenty of scope to include a range of parasites in any exam question on zoonotic parasites. There are two basic ways in which humans become involved with zoonotic parasites. Often humans act as accidental or dead-end hosts, picking up the infection usually by ingesting contaminated food or drink. However, sometimes human infections are an integral part of an indirect life cycle, so it's important that you understand the epidemiology of infection with individual zoonotic parasites if you're going to minimise the infection risk to you, your staff, clients and the community. For the rest of the podcast, I'm going to expand on these ideas using specific examples in the same way as I would expect you to do when answering an exam question on zoonotic parasites. So there you go. I've mentioned exams twice already in this podcast. The simplest forms of zoonotic infections are seen with gut protozoa, such as Giardia, Balanitidium or Cryptosporidium, where humans acquire infections by ingesting infective forms of the parasites in drinking water or food contaminated by fecal material. All these parasites are principally infections of wild and domestic animals, so in these cases we would think of humans as accidental hosts. This is because the infection can become patent in humans, who can then go on to produce infective forms. However, these parasites are not dependent on humans for maintaining transmission. Preventing human infection with these parasites includes taking basic hygiene precautions such as regular hand washing, providing clean drinking water, and adopting meat processing protocols to minimise fecal contamination during slaughter. Toxoplasma is another protozoan infection with important zoonotic consequences, particularly for women. Humans become infected either by accidentally ingesting oocysts passed in cat faeces or bradyzoites from undercooked meat. The greatest impact on human health is related to the migration and multiplication of the tachyzoite stages within the tissues of the body, in the same way as the parasite behaves in the intermediate host. The most important aspect of this migration and multiplication in humans is when an infection is acquired during pregnancy, and the parasite goes on to invade the developing fetus via the placenta, often leading to severe disabilities in the newborn baby. Also remember that the vaccine used for protecting sheep against toxoplasma contains live parasite material, so that too can be a source of infection for you or your staff. So from a personal point of view, it's very important for women vets and female practice staff to be aware of the risks from toxoplasma infection. However, all vets have a safety at work duty of care to female staff and a professional duty of care to female clients who might be at risk from cats or handling aborted sheep fetuses. Also remember that toxoplasmosis is often an important opportunist infection in people suffering from AIDS. So again, vets would have a duty of care to advise HIV-positive clients about the risks posed to them by toxoplasma infection. That's if their HIV status had been made aware to them. Although toxoplasma infection in humans results in bradyzoid cyst formation in the same way as it does in the mouse intermediate host, we would consider humans to be a dead-end host rather than an accidental host, as it is unlikely that humans would act as a source of infection for cats or any other animal species. Control measures for human toxoplasmosis includes taking sensible hygiene measures to reduce the risk of infection, including safe disposal of cat feces and ensuring that meat products are thoroughly cooked before eating. The migratory Ascarid nematode Toxocara canis can be an important zoonosis, especially in young children. Children can easily pick up infective eggs when playing in areas where dogs have defecated, such as play parks and sandpits. In humans, the larvae from the eggs enter the bloodstream and are carried to capillaries in the soft tissues in the same way as in the dog. However, in humans, the larvae continue wandering through the tissues, giving rise to a condition known as visceral larval migrans. This can manifest itself either as a rash on the skin, or more importantly, can interfere with vision if they reach the capillaries of the retina, which can often lead to blindness. In this case, humans act as dead-end hosts for Toxocara canis, as the nematode does not go on to complete its developmental cycle as in dogs. Control of human toxocariasis includes regular worming of dogs, along with educating owners in the need to keep dogs away from play areas, as well as needing to clean up after their animal if it defecates in a public place. To now, I've only talked about parasites where the human infections can be thought of as being either incidental or irrelevant to the parasite survival strategy. However, there are some zoonotic parasites, such as the cestodes Taenia solium, the pork tapeworm, and Taenia saginata, the beef tapeworm, where humans are an integral part of the parasite's indirect life cycle. In both cases, humans act as definitive hosts, harbouring the adult tapeworm in the gut. Pigs or cattle act as intermediate hosts, who ingest tapeworm eggs from pasture contaminated with human feces. The cycle is completed when humans eat either raw or undercooked pork or beef containing the cysticercus stage of the parasite. Preventing human infection with these parasites involves reducing contamination of pasture by hygienic disposal of human feces, meat inspection protocols, and thorough cooking of meat. Echinococcus and Dipolydium caninum are examples of zoonotic cestodes where humans are dead-end hosts or accidental hosts. Humans become infected with Echinococcus by ingesting eggs passed in the feces of dogs, with the formation of potentially life-threatening hydatid cysts in the liver or lungs. So in humans, the parasite behaves in the same way as it would in the intermediate host, but it's unlikely that the life cycle would be completed as dogs would have to ingest human tissues containing the hydatid cysts. Humans would therefore be considered as dead-end hosts. Hydatid disease in humans is of particular public health importance in areas of the world where there is a close relationship between humans and working dogs, such as in sheep-rearing areas. Controls include regular anti-helminthic treatment of dogs and strict regulations on the disposal of sheep carcasses and offal. Humans acquire Dipolydium caninum infection by accidentally ingesting dog fleas containing the cysticercoid stage of the cestode while grooming or playing with dogs. The cysticercoid then goes on to develop into an adult tapeworm in the gut of the human. So in this case, we can consider humans as accidental hosts, as the parasite has the potential to establish a patent infection. Dipolydium infections in humans are usually of low pathogenicity, but heavy infestations can occur in children, giving rise to non-specific gastrointestinal disturbances, or in some instances pernicious anemia due to vitamin B12 deficiency. However, implementing effective flea control regimes will usually be enough to control Dipolydium infections and reduce the risk of human infection. In this podcast, I've included a number of examples of zoonotic parasites to illustrate some of the important properties of this group of parasites that you need to understand in relation to their importance as human health risks. Also, you need to be aware that many new or emerging infectious diseases of humans are of animal origin. Think about BSE and the current threat from avian influenza. As usual, this podcast includes topics that have been covered in a number of parasitology lectures, emphasising that you will need to bring in information from different parts of the course when answering many of the examination questions. After listening to this podcast, you should look back on either your own lecture notes or visit the parasitology website on www.vet.com. www.ed.ac.uk/parasitology to check out the examples that I've used here and to find if there are any other examples of parasitic zoonoses that you might want to include in an examination question.